looked yesterday at a whole lot of stuff. I just got crazy with it. We dealt with Israel's attitude. We're going to bring stuff to where we are towards the prophets. The Lord said unto Jerusalem, you killed the prophets, you stoned them that were sent unto her. Jerusalem did. Elijah had said concerning his work, I only am left. I'm no better than my fathers. They didn't do any better than I'm doing. And he'd just soon take me, get me out of here, take my life and let me go. And they seek my life. And that was after the event that he had, where they had on Mount Carmel, when he killed all of the prophets of Baal. Nehemiah chapter 9, this is after they had gone back to Judah. And this is during the Persian Empire. So you have Babylon took Judah. You have the period of Nebuchadnezzar, of evil Merodach, and then Belshazzar, who was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. And then they were taken by the Medo-Persians, and Cyrus. And Cyrus has told all Jews, no matter where they were, because when Assyria had taken the northern kingdom and also that that was on the east of the Jordan, he scattered them. It's what you do. You scatter them and all over, so that way they cannot have a unified uprising against the government. And so put them in all different cities. Well, Cyrus, Judah was protected in the Babylonian captivity. It was from that the remnant came. And they had a protection there. And that's when Jeremiah, we noted yesterday, Jeremiah told them, said, you build your houses, you marry, have your children, you're going to be here for 70 years. They didn't like that. They had thought when Jehoiachin, who was the son of Josiah, he was actually the last legal king. He ruled for 3 months like his brother did. And Nebuchadnezzar took him to Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar appointed Zedekiah, who was an uncle to him, to rule in Judah. But Jehoiachin was the last legal king. And so the people were looking for the time when Jehoiachin would be returned to Jerusalem and sat on the throne of David. And so that's what they're looking for. And so Jeremiah says, now build your houses, you're going to be here for 70 years. And so Cyrus, when he began to reign in his first reign, the prophecies had been set forth, we have within the scriptures, of what he was going to do, and he let them go back to Judah. And so Zerubbabel, who was actually, there was a statement made about Jehoiachin. Yeah, you'll have three names. You'll have Jehoiachin, Jeconiah, and Coniah, all referred to the same king, the last legal king. And so with Coniah, Jeremiah identified that there would be no seed of Coniah sitting on the throne of David in Jerusalem. It's over. Right? So you deal with premillennialists today, and they're looking for someone to go back, sit on the seat of, for the Messiah to sit on the seat of David in Jerusalem. Not going to happen. Jeremiah already said it's not going to happen ever. You deal with the Jews today. They are looking for a political Messiah that will come in with the end gathering, will bring all the Jews back to Jerusalem, and that he will rule as a king, standing on the seat of David in Jerusalem. That's what they're still looking for today. They don't have a problem with Jesus of Nazareth. They have a problem with his deity. To them, he's just like any others that rose up, that tried to claim the position of the Messiah. Anyway, be that as it may, we find that they were looking for Jehoiachin to go back to Jerusalem and sit on the throne of David. Not going to happen. But he did have seed. Shealtiel, you'll find in the writing of Matthew, talked about Shealtiel, and his son, Zerubbabel. And Zerubbabel is the one that led the people back to Judah. But he did so as a governor, not as a king. And so for this period of time, they started building, and Sanballat and Tobiah had interfered with them that, you know, we want to help you. And he said, you don't have part nor lot, because they were actually the Samaritans and Mount Gerizim. And they said, you don't have anything to do with us. And so that made them mad. Well, if we can't help, you're not going to do it. That's kind of the way that issue goes. And so we find that in reference to that, they stopped building. They said, well, it must not be time for us to build. You know, so for 18 years, they didn't do anything except build their own houses and get all of that. And then we have Haggai and Zechariah that come upon the scene, and they say, what are you doing? What are you doing? The house of the Lord is desolate. And you built your houses, and you're enjoying all of this, and the house of the Lord is being neglected. God told you to build it. You know, trust Him. Build it. So they started building, and they were able to accomplish what they should have accomplished 18 years before. Ezra comes upon the scene, I believe it's about 60 years after that. Ezra and Nehemiah were within the same time period. And they had great success during that period of time. And so we have those, and Ezra was in the lineage of Aaron. As far as the high priest is concerned with functions, that they didn't have a temple. So we find that that's what was going on with them, but they're not going to have another king set up on the throne of David, but you have the descendants doing so. And so when we get to this part of Nehemiah, where Nehemiah tells them that they cast thy law behind their back and slew thy prophets that testified against them. We have a whole slew of slain, prophets here that we deal with. So that was their attitude toward them. And Jeremiah told them, but you know, ye have not. They have not kept the law, and they have not done what the Lord would have them to do. And that's what we looked at yesterday in reference to that. The prophet designed or defined as to be a mouth, and that's what Aaron was to Moses. Aaron, thy brother, shall be thy prophet. And a prophet, according to the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia, according to the uniform teaching of the Bible, the prophet is a speaker of or for God. His words are not the production of his own spirit, but come from a higher source, for he is at the same time also a seer. That's what they would see, things, you know, the future of what would transpire, who sees things that do not lie in the domain of natural sight, or who hears things which human ears do not ordinarily receive. And so that's what the prophet was. We noted the types of the prophets, and that's what this list is that I gave you, that list all the oral prophets, Azariah, the son of Oded, to Asa. We will consider what he had to say to Asa, Elijah to Ahab. The seers were that of Samuel, the prophet and seer, 2 Chronicles 9:29, Iddo, the seer. And then you have literary prophets of Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, and then you have the 12 minor prophets. Okay, we'll be looking at some of those. The examples of rejection. We're going to look at this one that you're probably familiar with among all of them that are there, is when Israel was looking for a king. The time periods get a little messed up. There was a long period of time when Israel was in the land and they ruled in their own tribes. Okay? That's what they did, and God protected them. And then it's going to come up a time with Samuel when they said, we want a king like the other nations. And that's one of the problems that exists with individuals that have, they look to see what's going on around them, and they will acquiesce to that. Did you bring my phone in? You didn't bring my phone in.
You want it?
No. That'll be fine. I think I can remember part of this. How many warnings, do you know any warnings that were given by Paul or any of them about being careful about individuals that bring in doctrines inconsistent with the Word of God?
When you deal with Peter had identified, and he refers to this, that those that in 2 Peter chapter 2, those that went the way of Balaam. Balaam he's even referred to as a prophet of God, because for the period of time that he was trying to prophesy against Israel,
He prophesied for Israel, and in that sense, because God told him he wanted to go. He looked at the wealth. I want to benefit from the wealth that Balak, the king of Moab, would provide me. And so Balaam, the Lord finally said, okay, you go, but you're only going to say what I tell you to say. So he's a prophet of God, because no matter how he tried, he could not prophesy against Israel. What he did do was, after it was all over, and Balak said, just don't prophesy at all. Don't say anything if you can't curse them. And Balaam said, well, here's what you do. You get the men of Israel to join with the women of Moab, and God will curse them. That's exactly what happened. Josephus is not inspired. And I don't know, he has high credentials, but he's not inspired. But his phrase concerning this is that when the women of Moab had captured the modesty of the men of Israel, they said, we can't have nothing to do with it. And this was the most beautiful of what they had, the desirable. And the men are going, wait, we got to fix this. And they said, well, you have to serve our gods, or we can't have anything to do with it. All this was in design, understand, design for this. And so the men of Israel says, okay, we'll do that. And that's what they did. And as a result of it, God cursed them, just like Balaam had stated. And so sometimes you have these events of where things are by design. There was a book written in 2005 about two individuals that were marketing geniuses. Now we're going to market, I'll just cut, we're going to market the LGBTQ event. We're going to market it. This is back in the 60s. And they started marketing this, and they said, we know we'll have two steps forward and three or four backward, but we're going to do this. And we're going to do it the fellow who wrote this book wrote in 2005. And they said in their process that we're going to get it until we have same-sex marriages, which came around, 2011, whatever it was, I don't know about. But this book was 2005, and it showed this was a process. We're marketing this so we can get what we want. I'm hoping they're doing the same thing with marijuana. You know, first it was a medical. Now they're looking to get the joyride recreational. So it's going to happen. Right. And you see how they market it over a period of time. And it doesn't matter what they lose, because they know eventually they're going to have that, or they will gain it. And I think they said there's something like, it was astronomical to me, something 36,000 dispensaries in Oklahoma. Everybody in Oklahoma's on marijuana but me, I think. And Bobby Jones. But anyway, so they do it over a process of time. When you look at what Peter had to say in 2 Peter chapter 2 about those that would come in with their, in verse 18, for uttering great swelling words of vanity, they entice in the lust of the flesh by lasciviousness those who are just escaping from them that live in error, promising them liberty while they themselves are bondservants of corruption, of whom a man is overcome, of the same he is also brought into bondage. And so he tells them that you watch out about these events. They're going to be there. Right? Now, on the kindly side, this is not an attack upon the whole system. What do you know about the disciples of Christ? What's your first response? They have something else that goes on. Some of them change here. Remember when they change Church of Christ disciples or whatever it was? What do you know about it? Well, what would you say the difference is? Both of them have instrumental music. That's where it started. We don't have instrumental music. They're still baptized for the remission of sins. Read a thing this morning that in Katy, Texas, the disciples of Christ were putting on a transgender bingo thing. They're supporting the, they talk something about the drag children, bringing them into the acceptance of it. This is a religious group that's doing it. I'm not talking about the far left side, but it was just amazing that that's what they're doing. And it was because of the uprising of the people that say, don't, you can't do this. We're fighting that battle right now of the push of the LGBTQ, X, W, Y, Z, whatever, to make sure that you now have to respect that. It's legal. You have to do it. And so they've got going on in schools of children that get you wound up here. But the point is that these events are not any different than what they were during the time of these prophets. They had to deal with it. So what do you do? If you were Samuel, how would you respond? Tell me something about Samuel. What do you know about Samuel? Who's his mother? Okay. And what was his life devoted to?
Serving
the Lord. He didn't have a choice. He didn't have a choice. You know, we have within our society a choice. What do you want to be when you grow up? You're going to serve in the house of God. Well, I want, you're going to serve in the house of God. And she took him after he was weaned, gave him to Eli, which Eli had his own problems, gave him to Eli, and was reared in that capacity and was the best prophet that really they ever, his whole life was devoted to that. All right, and so we're going to look at that when he commands the king. I don't want these right now. I want to look at this. We find that Eli, I don't know how much of this you can see. Eli in
1 Samuel 22, is that where we were? Where are we? I'm going to have to look at my own book. What do we got?
8.
Eight. Well, that's where Samuel would be in 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel 8. We find that if you look in chapter 17. In 17 it says, and Samuel judged Israel all the days of his life, and he went from year to year to in circuit to Bethel and Gilgal and Mizpah. And he judged in Israel in all those places. You look up in verse prior to that. He lived in Ramah.
That's where he lived. So here we have Shiloh. We talk about Shiloh when the Lord said that they would, or Jeremiah told people they'd be like Shiloh. Shiloh was ultimately destroyed by the Philistines when they take the Ark of the Covenant. Bethel is where the division was between Jeroboam, of where he made the division between the northern and the southern, was at Bethel. That's where that border was, that was in Ephraim, was there. Jerusalem, I want you to get an idea on this, and Beersheba. We're going to look at Beersheba. Beersheba is one of where the reference that is made in chapter 8 and verse 1, it came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel. Now the name of the firstborn was Joel, and the name of the second, Abijah. They were judges in Beersheba. Now one of the things we have in Amos chapter 8 and verse 4. Somebody have that? See what? Amos 8 and verse 4. This is going to tell us something about Beersheba.
And all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah.
Came to Samuel what?
At Ramah.
At Ramah. Is that what Amos 8 says?
No.
What? Amos 8, 4.
It says, hear this, you who swallowed up the needy and make the poor of the land call.
Well,
I don't know. Let me look. The problem, whether I've got the right passage there or not, that deals with... I don't know, it might be 4:8. Who knows? Nope. All right, if you find Beersheba in... that's not it either. Okay.
One of the things, I'll get that to fix that matter. Beersheba became known, because it talks about the sons of Samuel that ranked, that were judging in Beersheba. Okay, this is the southern border. You get down here to the southern part, and he will join Beersheba and Bethel and Dan, or Dan and Beersheba, in the sins of idolatry in regards to their conduct. That's what they were noted for. These were the, you know, it's kind of like San Francisco. These are the major ones of where this idolatry was carried out. And so we have Beersheba that's down here. And so when we find back in 1 Samuel chapter 8, we find what Samuel does. Verse Samuel 8, that his sons were in Beersheba. His sons walked not, verse 3, in his ways, but turned aside after lucre and took bribes and perverted judges, and now, or just perverted justice. And then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel at Ramah. Now Ramah was in chapter 25, 1 Samuel 25. So I have that one right, 25:1. Samuel died, and all Israel gathered themselves together and lamented him and buried him in his house at Ramah. And so we find that that's where he lived. But he had, we can, a circuit. We have Bethel, Mizpah, Gilgal. There's two Gilgals that's identified. One of the first is right as they crossed over the river of Jordan, but there was one that was up north as well. But he had Mizpah. This was his circuit, and that Samuel was involved in. Well, his sons are down here perverting justice. They're ruling in reference to that of a bride. They're the ones, you've heard the phrase meat hook. Get your meat hooks off of me. Okay, that's where it came from. They had, the priest could go in with a meat hook, and they could take when the sacrifices were made and strike it, and whatever they pulled out was theirs. Well, we find that Samuel's sons would go in before it had been boiled, before all the fat was off of it, and they would get what they wanted before that. And so that's what they would do with the sacrifices. That's what they wanted. But that's where it came from. The priest could take that meat hook, and they could pull away whatever meat was there, and that would be theirs. All right, so they abused that situation as well. All right, so we find that he had that particular area. Ramah, this kind of old jungle. About Gilgal, here's the other one. One's over here. We had the question mark. There was a Gilgal there. That's where the temple was, or the tabernacle, was first set up, was in Gilgal. And so it went from there to Shiloh, which we noted was up north, or up there at the top, where Shiloh is, was there. And so we're down here with that of Ramah, and that's where Samuel lived. That was his house. So he had that circuit of where he would go to Mizpah, Bethel, and Gilgal. And there's one event, I believe, that when he went in, the elders of the city are going, "What are you doing here?" When the prophet came to visit, the elders took attention as to what was going on. But he had that circuit that he was involved in, but he lived in Ramah. That's where his house was. We find that there's two areas. One to identify is that Dan, and that's what he identified with the sins that were going on between Beersheba and Dan. Dan, early on, when it was divided up, Dan was over here in the area. Here you have Benjamin, you have Ephraim, and there was a little spot. Just a little spot. they were able to receive their property based upon the number of people. And they had the smallest, and so they just had a little spot. During the time of the judges, you're going to find that when you look at this, in the latter part of the judges, you'll find where one comes in, a group of people come in, and they're looking for a priest. Well, they find him there, so they kind of hire him, and they go up north. And so you have Dan, now you will have it up north. They moved from this one, this area, up north, which is up by Damascus, up in that particular area, right across from Tyre, and so Dan, they moved up there. And so when they talk about the matter of the idolatry that's going on, the perverting of justice that's going on in Dan, it's that one, not this one, it's up here in the north, and you have Beersheba in the south. These are high points in reference to the idolatry. And then you have, in reference to that, you have right in here of Bethel. It was at the border of Ephraim. You have Benjamin, and then you have Judah. It's interesting that the Lord talked about the word that's being spread in Jerusalem and all Judea. Well, wasn't the temple, wasn't that in Jerusalem or in Judea? Bethlehem or Benjamin, that's where the temple, it was in Benjamin, actually. It's where Mount Zion was in Benjamin, not Judah. But it's right on that border. And so you have Benjamin and Judah that are always joined together in reference to that particular event. All right? So we find that in reference to this, now let me go back with these. It kind of gets an idea. I encourage you to take, when it talks about these places, look them up on the map. It'll get you a visual of where they were, where they traveled, where all of this was taking place, and it'll help you retain what's going on in reference to these particular events. All right. So we find that within the rejection, the example of the rejection that was set forth according to the prophets of God. Samuel was a prophet. He didn't do anything that was contrary to the will of God as a prophet. And he, you know, he's like the Lord. Where did I sin? You identify. Where have I sinned? And that's what Samuel does. Where have I sinned? All right. So here's this rejection. And so this is probably one of them that comes to mind most of all. But we find in verse 5 of 1 Samuel 8, "And they said unto him, Behold, thou art old, and thy sons walk not in thy way. Now make us a king to judge us like the nations. But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, Give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed unto Jehovah." So Samuel's upset because they're rejecting him. Or because they're rejecting Jehovah in reference to it. He's their king. He has been their king for hundreds of years. Okay? I mean, this isn't just like that he just, you know, fell off of the turnip truck here and right after the Joshua the elder died. There's a period of time, hundreds of years, before the judges were sent. And then we have a long period of the judges that ruled over them, or delivered them. They still didn't rule over them. They delivered them. And they were localized. Samson dealt with the Philistines. Okay? So you have different areas of these judges that were delivering Israel. And we read that yesterday of where Jeremiah, I believe, or Nehemiah had indicated that you served the Lord, then you didn't. And he delivered you into your oppression. And then you were fine with that, and then you went into rebellion again. And one of the things that you will find in the scriptures is this matter of the process of how this goes. And I have it on the ark, so I won't forget it, but I always forget it, so I have to go back and read this. Here we go. They'll go from rebellion to retribution to repentance to redemption to rest. And then after a period of time, 40 or 80 years, most of it was about 40 years, then they'd go back to the rebellion. And they'd go through that process again, and the Lord would execute his retribution against them, and then they would cry unto the Lord to deliver us. They'd have their repentance, he'd deliver them, and they'd have their rest for 40, 80 years, whichever one it was, and then they'd back into it again. And so we see that cycle that's going on. And so when you think about that, don't think about the fact that we're 2,000 years away from it. How far has the deviation taken in reference to that of religious responsibilities and commitments?
All right, so you find that if when Israel demanded a king, how would you respond if you were there?
We think about when the Lord was crucified, you have the multitude. How would you have responded if he was in the multitude?